Afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Capital Investment Committee meeting. I'd like to call the meeting to order. We do have a quorum. Representative Lilly, have you reviewed the minutes of April 7th?
Yes, sir. I'd like to move them.
Lilly moves the minutes of April 7th. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed by the same sign. Minutes are approved. We have a fairly robust agenda this afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, so we'll try to do our best to stay on schedule. I would remind members, as long as I'm thinking about it, that we are not meeting this Thursday. There is no meeting this Thursday. We start out today with a presentation by Homes for All. Please come forward and introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Dan Kitzberger with the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless. And today I'm here on behalf of Homes for All, a statewide campaign of almost 130 organizations. We're housing developers and homeless service providers, education and healthcare professionals, faith-based groups, senior associations, and local units of government. Our common thread is that we understand the connection between housing stability and success. This year, Homes for All is requesting a total of $130 million in bonds to meet the housing needs of Minnesotans, $110 million in housing infrastructure bonds, and $20 million in general obligation bonds. Housing infrastructure bonds currently have three uses. We can preserve federally assisted housing, and a map is included in your packet of that federally assisted housing locations. We can use it to purchase land for land trust home ownership opportunities, and to preserve and develop supportive housing for households at risk of or experiencing homelessness. We're also proposing a fourth use for this bond: senior housing for households 55 and older, and up to 50% of area median income. The general obligation bonds are used to preserve Minnesota's aging publicly owned housing stock, which serves almost 40,000 households throughout the state. Now, I'd like to provide a bit of a backdrop for our next presenters. According to the 2015 Wilder Statewide Homeless Study, there was a 9% decrease in homelessness since 2012, the first drop in a decade. That said, on any given night, there are over 9,000 Minnesotans experiencing homelessness. 52% are age 24 or younger. 600,000 households in Minnesota are considered cost burdened by their housing. This is an increase of 70% since 2000. A relatively new trend is the persistent growth in Minnesota seniors experiencing homelessness. Additionally, there are currently about 40,000 senior renter households with incomes at or below 30% of area median income, or about $18,000. In light of coming demographic changes, such as by that 2020, a number of people age 65 and old, the number of people age 65 and older will outnumber the K-12 population for the first time in state history. This is a challenge that requires our immediate attention. So just a few things to keep in mind, and with that, I'll hand it off to our next presenters.
Hello, my name is Rick Goodyman. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of Southwest Minnesota Housing Partnership, and I provided a handout showing projects and pipeline. It's this colorful legal instrument. And what I wanted to really talk about is the uses that we've used for the housing infrastructure bonds, the type of projects, and the projects that are in our pipeline. So the spreadsheet is laid out with the name of the project, the location, the county, the development type, or whether that's preservation or new construction, the status of whether it's completed, under construction, closing, or our pipeline, the number of buildings, type of development, number of units, number of rental assisted units, and then a breakdown on 1, 2, and 3 bedroom units. And the last column is the age of the buildings. So the primary use that we've used housing infrastructure bonds for is several different uses. One is, as Dan stated, we've used those for supportive housing for homeless. We've used a lot of the funds for preservation of a federally assisted housing. And then we've also used those for new construction, some of which have benefited workforce. So starting at the top, Highland Apartments in Candy Eye County is a 78-unit elderly project, Section 8, and we used housing infrastructure bonds to reposition the property and rehabilitate it. Eagle Ridge and Maplewood, well, Eagle Ridge and Grand Terrace are new construction, primarily serving workforce. Lakeside Manor is a project that was owned and operated by the Redwood Falls Housing Redevelopment Authority. The property burnt, and we're in the current process of rehabilitating that property. On the pipeline, I want to talk a little bit about that. There are the gold, the blue, and the greens, and those are a 515 portfolio that the mortgages are expiring, meaning that they're at risk of losing their rental assistance. So once the mortgages expire, and these are rural development 515 properties, the rental assistance would be recaptured by the federal government. Those are in small communities, which are the gold. Those we are doing partner substitutions. The three Red Wing properties, we're doing a 9% application, and we would be using probably a little bit of or a small amount of housing infrastructure bonds. And then the greens, which are private activity bonds with 4% credits, those would require a significant amount of bond funds in order to preserve those properties. And you can see that they cover a large portion of central and southern Minnesota. They also have a lot of rental assistance that we would like to preserve. And then one other property I wanted to focus on, which is the last property on the list, which is called Solace Apartments. And that's a property or project we've been working on with the City of St. Peter for over 2 years. It is a property that's designed to be a reentry for people that are exiting the criminal justice system. We're in a partnership with the drug court, with Nickel County, City of St. Peter, the public school district, primary health, public health, probation. And we're designing this property to serve people that are exiting. A large number of these people have mental health issues, chemical dependency issues. And what we're really looking at is providing stable housing so that we can work with them and quit the cycle of people continuing to go through the system and being a huge cost to our communities. So with that, that would end my presentation. Thank you. Hi, Chris.
Thank you, Mr. Goodman. Go ahead, introduce yourself for the record and start your presentation.
Mr. Chair, Ryan Strack, Minneapolis Public Schools. Thank you for the opportunity to share about a topic that affects almost 10% of our students over the course of a school year, homelessness. Yes, last school year, 9.2%, or about 3,800 students attending Minneapolis Public Schools, experienced homelessness. And our staff provided services to an additional 2,600 students who attended other district schools or were underage four. Through our extensive and long-standing research partnership with Professor Ann Masson at the University of Minnesota, we've learned a great deal about the powerful, specific, and negative impact homelessness has on academic achievement. In fact, it is one of the most harmful risk factors found in the academic literature. We've also learned about how to support our students, and we work every day to implement these strategies. But we know that safe and stable housing is the most impactful way to help our students succeed. While homelessness is a multi-systemic issue, the need for affordable and supportive housing is a common denominator for most of our families. The housing that would be funded by this bonding proposal is a powerful two-generation approach that benefits both the children and their families. This is important because one of the most jarring statistics from the 2012 Wilder Homeless Study is that 30% of homeless parents were themselves first homeless as children. And when you look at just parents of children under age four, that percentage grows to 43%. Safe and stable housing provides a foundation for learning. Our teachers and support staff will continue to do everything in their power to help our students succeed, but housing would address the core issue and would remove a major source of stress and trauma for our children. The devastating reality of homelessness in Minneapolis, and also to a similar extent statewide, is that nearly 90% of students who experience homelessness are students of color, primarily Black and American Indian. This means that homelessness exacerbates race-based achievement gaps. This is an important issue for Minneapolis Public Schools. We dedicate resources to address the issue. Our school board has endorsed the Homes for All campaign. And while I represent MPS today, I know that students across Minnesota and all of your districts are dealing with homelessness. My hope is that as you deliberate in many important decisions, you'll remember that when we talk about homelessness in Minnesota, we're talking about children and their families. The 2015 Wilder study showed that 35% of the overall homeless population was children. To truly understand the scope of this issue is to stand outside of people serving people homeless shelter in downtown Minneapolis each day and watch children board bus after bus, van after van, to go to school. Thank you for your time. Happy to answer questions either here or anytime.
Thank you. Go ahead. Introduce yourself for the record.
My name is Julie Frick. I'm the Executive Director of the Carver County Community Development Agency, and I'm here for Minnesota NARL. Mr. Chairman and members, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you in support of the proposal to address Minnesota's shortage of affordable housing with services for seniors. Noting the serious shortage, in 2015, a consortium of housing authorities and private developers commissioned a study by Maxfield Research, which that report produced that Minnesota's population is aging at a rate that our housing supply and our services cannot meet. The number of Minnesotans age 55 and over is projected to rise from 1.5 million in 2015 to 2.1 million by 2030, and that's a 39% increase. Independent housing with limited services targeted to seniors is already in high demand and is particularly for low-income households hard to find. Access to these units in the metro area is restricted with availability severely limited by low turnover and the growing demand. As seniors age in place, the majority will need a level of service which is not as extensive as the assisted living services or the higher care facilities, but they would at least provide basic services as transportation, housekeeping, meals, and maybe some limited health care oversight. Affordable multi-unit housing is not cheaper to build or construct than market rate housing. In fact, it makes it harder with the rents that are restricted, and owners can't typically recover their investment in those properties. The most difficult to serve are the older households that are in the middle. Some of those that can't afford to pay the high cost of the market rate housing and private pay housing, but they don't qualify for the Section 8 program, and so they're unable to find affordable age-restricted housing. This gap in the housing market would be addressed by the senior housing proposal provisions of Representative Hausman's bill. The Serving Our Seniors proposal calls for construction of affordable senior housing that provides basic, cost-effective services through the creation of a state financing gap program. The new program would be coupled with low-income housing tax credits, tax-exempt bonds, and other local resources to help meet the demand of the affordable senior housing. To be eligible for this new program, seniors would have to be at 50% of median income or below. The housing units generated would either be with new construction, acquisition of existing, or adaptive reuse, and could be publicly or privately owned. Local housing and development authorities would work to ensure that the units are sized to allow for cost-efficient delivery of services. Of critical importance is getting the language in the bill to allow for housing appropriations bond proceeds to be used for meeting this ongoing need. The objective in 2016 would be to have the bonding bill include the authorizing language and funding to launch two or more of these housing projects that we could develop a template with. Addressing this gap would meet three significant issues. It extend the time period that seniors are able to live independently. It would delay the need for seniors to have to access the more cost-intensive programs and housing. And it would expand the stock of affordable long-term units. And while I'm here to speak to the senior housing provisions, I also wanted to state that we strongly support the housing infrastructure bonds for public housing preservation. In 2014, the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency received three times the amount of applications for public housing preservation than what they had money to fund. And with that, I'd like to.
In closing, housing underpins many of the core services that state government provides. We know that when stably housed, kids do better in school, people with chronic conditions are better able to manage them, and people leaving incarceration are less likely to reoffend. We know that for every dollar the state invests in support of housing, we return $1.44. In short, we can pour all the money we want into state programs, but if the people served by them aren't stably housed, we won't achieve the best possible outcomes. So thank you again for your time today, and with that, we'll field any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Kitzberger. I have a question I'd like to start out with. You know, one of the things we struggle with here at the Capital Investment Committee is dealing with all the things that the state of Minnesota already owns and we have to take care of. As you structure these housing projects, do you look ahead to the day when these projects will need to be rehabilitated or, you know, remodeled? Is that built into your process?
Yeah, that's a good question, Mr. Chair. So the thing I'd say about that is that the neat thing about housing infrastructure bonds in particular is that they allow for private ownership. And so a private entity like Southwest Minnesota Housing Partnership would come in and apply for those funds.
So to address your question, yes, we do. We do look at capitalized reserves. So what we're doing is we're running this out for 20 years. We're looking at the needs of the property, sizing the reserves for on a capitalized side, as well as reserves going in from operations. So we're sizing those to look at what the projected use we're going to have in year 10, year 12, on out, sizing that so that we can keep the condition of the property up. So when we're acquiring a preservation project, one of the first things we're doing is we're doing an initial inspection to see what the immediate needs are. Then we're running a capital needs assessment to look at it in outlying years and then sizing the reserves, because we don't want to keep repeating what's happened in the last 30 years where houses or homes were built, rental homes were built, and there wasn't enough emphasis on how do you maintain the property without continually coming back to the well and having to reinvest in the project again, which is precisely where we are when you look at the long list of preservation projects that we have on our list. Is they are not, have not been kept up. We need to reinvest in them, but it's a lot cheaper to do that reinvestment than have to build them anew and also to lose the rental assistance that's connected to the property.
And thank you for that, Mr. Goodman.
Mr. Chair, I'd add in regard to general obligation bonds, which are used for public housing preservation, we're not looking to add additional units in public housing. We're simply trying to hang on to what we've got.
Thank you. Representative Hausman has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to just point out that we limited our testimony, but there are a number of people, if they can raise their hands, if they who've come today to be part of this effort. Lots of hands going up. Who would also want to send their message as well. Mr. Chair, I wanted to just point to one other thing in your packet. They've referenced a number of them. There is a letter from AARP, which was came as a surprise. I was not solicited, and they heard about the additional emphasis on seniors. And I don't know if you heard I just wanted to underline a couple of things, that is the single fastest growing segment of those who are homeless, and that demographic in the state is one we need to pay attention to. Just to help people understand how big the need is, that $100 million in 2014 funded only 26% of the applications, and so there were many more projects ready to go that weren't sufficient. But how quickly one can turn around the statistics when we begin to focus on it. That was sort of a first, that big infusion of funds. And the particular group that I wanted to pay attention to is those families with children who are homeless. In this very short period of time, that number has dropped 17%. So with just a little bit of effort, you can make a huge amount of difference. And then I wanted to say just a word about, you know, we did always the traditional general obligation bonding for public housing, but a number of years ago, MHFA came to us and said, if we could use our bonding authority and use housing infrastructure bonds, which would be appropriation bonds, it would allow us to partner with others, including all those nonprofits, Lutheran Social Service, Catholic Charities, Common Bond, Beacon, and the advantage that gives us is for $1 of that state bond, they match at least $3 of private funding. That's the work that all of those community partners do. So this is a unique use, I think, of that particular bond that gives us some opportunity to leverage a lot of private dollars.
Thank you. Representative Runbeck has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to thank Mr. Kitzberger. He's been trying to help me get my arms around this subject. But so one question, because we do hear continually about the need, and we never build enough, And since there are many different entities, nonprofits that are managing, running these facilities and homes and so on, do they each have a different standard of income eligibility? Do they, I mean, do they at a certain income height level, do they require turnover? I'm curious if there's any standard way of looking at that.
So the
Mr. Goodman.
The largest funding source right now is the low-income housing tax credits, and those are 60% or less area median income. However, people are not required to leave if their income exceeds that. So we use it sometimes for, in a lot of cases, for workforce. People who are entering the job market can come in, and their income can accrue until they're ready to leave. Other Section 8 housing of Section 515, which is rural development, are 80% or less area median income. So there are different programs, and we're putting these projects together. We're really cognizant on what the market demand is, and we're trying to mix and match the funding programs to meet what the target market is. If that answers your question.
A follow-up, Representative Runbeck?
Not really, thank you.
All right. Very good. I don't have any other questions on the list. Thank you for your presentation today.
Thank you again.
Appreciate your coming to committee. We have a number of bills we're going to be hearing for information only today, starting with House File 2561, Representative Erickson. I'm sorry, Representative Hansen, a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I was just wondering, did we just hear a bill, or was so that was not an informational hearing on Representative Hausman's bill? It was just a discussion.
Just a discussion. Representative Erickson, would you care to introduce your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 2561 is a request for capital investment for the City of Mille Lacs, which is the county seat in Mille Lacs County, for public infrastructure. And with me today, Mr. Chair, is Greg LaRude, who is the administrator of the City of Mille Lacs, and also I have the superintendent of Mille Lacs Public Schools with me to talk about the fact that this is a proposal that has economic benefit, environmental benefit, and educational benefit. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like the gentleman to explain the bill.
Thank you. Please introduce yourself for the record and go ahead with your presentation.
My name is Greg LaRude. I'm the Mille Lacs City Manager. And as Representative Erickson said, we're looking to extend city utilities out to a couple of communities, but also a parcel that will be served by a school building. There are several economic benefits as well as environmental benefits to this project. Mille Lacs County, in addition to other headwinds, struggles to create a competitive economic environment. We're a very poor property county, and in addition, it makes commercial and residential development very difficult. This would extend utilities out to serve already existing commercial properties on private systems. The other economic advantage would be having the ability to extend utilities to both the cities of Forreston and Pease. Their systems are at capacity, so they cannot accommodate any future development, whereas the City of Mille Lacs treatment facilities are able to accommodate adding both of those cities into our treatment systems. There are three environmental benefits, large environmental benefits. The first one is the city's municipal wells are out in this area, and our drinking water management area, we should manage that so we can protect the water source or the source water for the city's drinking water. And in that area, there are 25 individual homes and businesses that are all on their own system. So that's 25 connections to the aquifer that each one allows a potential for contamination. By extending utilities to this area, we eliminate that threat. Number two, the regional treatment facilities would limit the number of discharge points. Presently, Forreston and Pease each discharge on their own system, as does Mille Lacs. If they were to connect to Mille Lacs, all their two discharge points into the Rum River would be eliminated, leaving just Mille Lacs. And then finally, we have quite a few people in this area that are unserved by utilities that they would benefit by having their water treated to a state standard that they're presently not. With that, I'll turn it over to Superintendent Trubenbach for the education.
Yes, Tim Trubenbach, Superintendent of Schools in Malacca. In addition to the economic and environmental benefits of this bill, there also is an educational benefit. I would respectfully request that you turn to the map on the backside of the handout that was given. It actually shows the school site. This was a property that was purchased a number of years ago with the intent for us to build a facility that would house a service called Rum River North. We're actually part of the Rum River Cooperative, which is a cooperative that includes Cambridge Isani, Mora, Princeton, Isle, Bram, Ogilvie, and Malacca, and it serves them for special education students. Essentially what this site does is offers additional services for those students that have exhausted all the internal services that are provided within our current system. So with that being said, it offers additional programming in areas such as deaf, hard of hearing, blind, visually impaired, autism, behavior, auditory, occupational therapy, and physical therapy, and with the intent for skills to be taught and then for those students to integrate back into the regular school setting. So,
very good. Representative Erdahl has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just wondering from the testifiers, do you know where your ranking is on the PFA list?
We are working on that right now. I can tell you that without state funds, we would not be able to do this project. But we are working on getting the PPL now.
Representative Erdahl, you're done. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just looking at this map, is there another school just south of that road someplace? Or on the other side of the... Is there a, like from Forest, and this is Highway
23
on the south side of the road, is there, to my knowledge, is there not a, like a private school or something out in the country there? Or?
That is farther west, west of Forest and south. We would not go that far.
Okay. But what school would that be?
Faith Christian.
Faith Christian. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Dean has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifier. So currently there's no commercial development along there. So really this is to try to enhance the commercial development. Is that correct?
There is existing commercial development close to Malacca. There's a hardware store, a rental store, and a church. All of their systems, though, they cannot add on. There can be no more development without either expanding their on-site, their individual treatment system, which isn't practical for a commercial building, and that way by having water and sewer out there, not only can they add, we can improve fire protection for those places as well.
Representative Dean.
Okay, and thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm trying to recall the fund that was out there for economic development that's presented.
Are you referring to BDPI?
Yeah, I mean, would that be a possibility for a project like this?
Mr. Trubenbach.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'm not familiar with that particular program.
Mr. Trubenbach, we'll make sure you get familiar.
Mr. LaRue. Okay. I'm Mr. Trubenbach.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. I've gotten you two mixed up. I apologize. No wonder you looked at me with that confused look when I
just
kept saying
following.
Trubenbach. It's hard work being a chair. Yeah. Any other question from Representative Hausman?
Mr. Chair, I was also just going to raise the BDPI possibility, so maybe we'll somebody will be getting that to them.
I'm sure we will. With that, I see no more questions on the list. I'm tempted to call you Representative Torkelson because there's some history there. We were at a golf tournament one time, and her golf cart did say Sandra Torkelson on it, so I have claimed her as my sister ever since.
Yes, Mr. Chair and brother, I hope that you would look favorably upon this request.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. I appreciate your bringing it to the committee. Thank you, gentlemen, for your presentation. Representative O'Driscoll, you're next. From here on in, we'll try to avoid the aliases and stick to our real names. Welcome to the testifiers table. Resident Ed O'Driscoll, please introduce your bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I have with me two groups of people that are going to be making separate presentations. And before I ask them to move forward with their presentation, I just want to give a little background to the committee. In the St. Cloud area, we have, as by federal law, when it comes to transportation requirements, to have a metropolitan planning organization. And so we use the umbrella of the St. Cloud Area Planning Organization. And every year they get together and they prioritize the projects that are road projects and other kinds of projects in the community. And before us today in the committee, I have two different projects that are toward the top of the list for the St. Cloud Planning Organization. And some of these have been there for a period of time. One that we're going to be looking at today is from the city of Sartell, and the page is passing around some information that will be beneficial as we have this conversation today. To my immediate right is the Assistant City Administrator and the Community and Planning Development Director, Anita Rasmussen. And Ms. Rasmussen will give us some background, and I will also provide some supplementary questions for you folks as well. So, Mr. Chair, with that.
Thank you. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Anita Rasmussen, the Community Development Director and Assistant City Administrator with the City of Sartell. I'm very pleased to be here with you this afternoon. Before you is a request for approximately $4 million in funding to complete the construction of a regional roadway corridor in the City of Sartell, commonly known as the 50th Avenue South Project. We see this project satisfying three very significant and meaningful goals for Sartell and for the Central Minnesota region. The first goal is to put into action a number of adopted regional roadway plans. This project does provide some consistency with local and regional roadway plans, including the West Metro Corridor Study, the Sartell Comprehensive Plan, and the St. Cloud Area Organization's Transportation Plan. The West Metro Corridor Plan, which is a regional transportation study, was approved to further facilitate a north-south corridor from Sartell into the St. Cloud area and Wade Park in an effort to create a system linkage which would act as an alternative corridor to Highway 15, in essence alleviating some of the congestion that many feel is currently on Highway 15. This West Metro Corridor study was a regional plan endorsed and approved by the City of St. Cloud, Stearns County, and the City of Sartell. This corridor also provides a second goal of increasing economic growth and economic development opportunities. This project literally opens up hundreds of acres of private property for future development, opportunities for medical office, for professional office, and for what we hope to be additional opportunities for workforce housing and affordable housing. This also does help assist in redevelopment and development efforts to offset some of the loss the City of Sartell and Benton County received as a result of the explosion, the demolition of the Verso paper mill, which we experienced in 2012. Our largest taxpayer, that's a reduction of about $25 million in tax in value. The improvements also facilitate greater mobility for thousands of people, clients, patients that utilize the regional medical facilities, and many, again, are from inside the city of Sartell, inside the central Minnesota area, but outside the region as well, that visit the vast medical opportunities that are in and around this 50th Avenue corridor, along with our hope to be our newly constructed community center, which will be a regional draw for the area. Our third and final goal is to provide additional emergency response. This north-south corridor does provide an integral part to increase the times of our police, our fire, public works to the areas of the southerly part of Sartell along with the northerly part of St. Cloud. We do know that these safety improvements will result in the decrease of emergency time, which we hope and we know will save lives and protect properties. We also are very fortunate that we want to be able to create additional pedestrian and bicycle facility rights to increase alternative modes of transportation. And this will allow for the construction of trails and sidewalks along this corridor, which will assist in providing alternative modes to the schools, to work, and towards places of employment. It is our hope that you will seriously consider this opportunity to collaborate with and leverage investment that the federal dollars we received highway federal highway priority project and federal surface transportation funds, along with the city's contribution, in order to leverage these investments to make this important roadway corridor project a reality. It is our hope that you recognize the economic development impact, the safety impact, and our ability to collaborate regionally and federally to support this important project for Sartell and the Central Minnesota region. With that, I'll be happy to answer questions.
Thank you. You must have done a great job.
Mr. Chair,
silenced the entire committee. Representative O'Driscoll.
I might just underscore a couple of things. Prior to coming to the legislature, I was the mayor of the city of Sartell. And I'm in my sixth year here in the legislature, and this project still remains unfinished from the time that I was on the city council. And we've had it on our list for a number of years as well. The thing I really want to underscore on here is what Ms. Rasmussen said, that in 2012, the community suffered a rather large loss with the explosion and then demolition and closing of the mill. The city was on a path to diversify its economy and getting very heavily involved in providing medical services. And as we've been on this committee, we've heard a number of times that the growing demographics and people needing those kinds of services. We have a nice hub that complements the St. Cloud hub in that area. And it's it's known as a regional area to be able to receive those services. Our medical response and first responder time during certain times of the day is greatly inhibited because of where our central EMS system is to be dispatched. We could end up having to go 3, 4, and 5 miles out of the way during rush hour to be able to get to a spot that would be no less than a half or three quarters of a mile away from where, if these roadways were to be constructed, that we could not only experience economic development, but again, impact people, their safety, and their livelihood. So, Mr. Chair, with that, I thank you, the committee, for their time.
Thank you. I just have a quick question. All these roads here involved are city streets, is that correct?
I'll let Ms. Rasmussen background, because some of those are connecting to county and other stated roads.
Yes, the roads indicated are local roadways, but they essentially connect two Stearns County highways along with being a parallel roadway to Trunk Highway 15. So they essentially connect regional roadway systems in an integrated regional roadway network system.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. I see no questions. Thank you for being here. Thanks for your presentation. Representative O'Driscoll, you have a doubleheader going today.
I do. And we want to compliment you on your tie today. We think it's very nice today, Mr. Chair. So,
I guess you didn't get the memo, although you did get the blue shirt memo. So
I did. I noticed that you and the committee administrator color coordinated very well today.
Uh-huh. Thank you for that. We're a team. I tried to get Chelsea to wear a tie, too.
Mr. Chair, the second bill that we are looking at is another economic driver and public safety issue within the St. Cloud area. You heard Ms. Rasmussen say that Benton County was affected by the mill explosion as well, because Benton County was the host county for the Verso paper mill. And they also suffered a loss as related to this, and they're also looking to continue to grow and to diversify the community. The project that we're going to be talking about with Benton County, and I have Jake Bowerly, one of the county commissioners, and Chris Bird, the county engineer for the county of Benton, will talk about some of the work that's going on in this area and to also help leverage the St. Cloud Airport project that there's been many dollars invested in as well, as we continue to try to grow that as an asset for the community as well. So, Mr. Chair, with that, it appears that Mr. Bowerly will be our first testifier today.
Thank you. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your presentation.
Commissioner Jake Bowerly from Benton County, Minnesota. I'm happy to be here today. Thank you for the time. We're seeking $3.5 million to complete a $4.5 million project that will link Sartell and be an east-west corridor connecting 15 and 10 to Highway 23 and on towards the St. Cloud Airport. The St. Cloud Airport, in the last 20 years, has spent $80 million for a regional asset, and this ring road, if you will connect our fastest growing area to the St. Cloud Airport. Benton County is the 13th fastest growing county in the state. It's the 7th fastest outstate county in growth, and the western half of our county is the fastest growing part of that. So this particular project is crucial to our growth economically and transportation-wise. Benton County has already bonded for the right-of-way. We bonded about 4 years ago and acquired all the right-of-way for this project, and we're paying those back with property tax money. Chris Bird and I went out 2 years ago, 2014, to Washington, D.C., and lobbied for some federal funding. We were unsuccessful there, and because they don't have any earmarks at that time, we were unable to get any funding. Last year, this project was on our list as well, along with Benton 3 up the hill, and we used, in order to complete that project, we used our property tax money to complete the funding gap we had on that Benton 3 up the hill. But that's moving forward, and that's going to happen this year. We are the sixth highest tax county in the state, so we can only go back to the property tax so many times, but this project is very regionally important to the whole community. So this is our third try at this project, and we are persistent, and we will be back if we don't. as mentioned earlier, this will enhance mobility, improve safety, reduce congestion, and I think the economic development part of this is truly significant, along with, you know, the bicycle paths and so on and so forth. This is $4.5 million. It's only a 3-mile road, but it's 2.5-mile road, but it's got a lot of wetlands and a lot of challenges to make this connection. So we're looking forward to help from this committee if we can.
Mr. Chair, just some supplemental comments on Mr. Bowerly's comments, if I could.
Go ahead, and Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things that I want to underscore on this project is you heard Mr. Bowerly talk about the County Road 3 up the hill. That was a major project priority that the county had as a result of the relocation of a bridge in the community. A lot of traffic was put into a neighborhood where the infrastructure was less than adequate for the amount of traffic volume that's being driven on that. This road that we're talking about, the County Road 3, actually connects Highway 10 in the community down to I-94. Is an internal corridor in the community. The county just could not wait any longer to get this project done, so they certainly used their best efforts to try to find money internally. But as far as doing this particular project, which will help with a lot of additional economic growth and leverage all of the money that's been put in at the St. Cloud Airport from local and federal dollars, they need the help of the state of Minnesota to be able to help bridge that gap for them in the $3.5 million that Mr. Bowerly had mentioned.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. You've been talking about the airport quite a bit, and I've been looking at this map and I'm not finding the airport. Can you help me?
Mr. Chair, I will ask maybe Mr. Bird, the engineer, would be able to help us with a little bit better location on that. If you can approach him, he can show you on the map.
Thank you. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I am Chris Bird. I'm the Public Works Director and County Engineer for Benton County. So if you're looking at the map, the airport would be at the south or right side on this map, actually just off the map into Sherburne County. The map pretty much shows the southwest corner of Benton County. The particular project that we're discussing today would be the dashed or hatched alignment that you see towards the top of that map. That would be the 2.5 miles of road that would need to be constructed. The remainder portions of that is an existing roadway that exists today. It wouldn't accommodate any future traffic and have to need to be upgraded sometime in the future. But the project specifically that we're talking about today is the dashed or hatched portion in the top of the map.
So thank you, Mr. Bird. What's the distance between the project location and the airport?
Okay, so we've got 2.5 miles of newly constructed road. There are 4 miles from the east-west road, that is Kassaw 3, down to Highway 23, and then 2.5 more miles after that to the airport. So from the project that we're talking about today to the airport is 6 miles.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, one other thing that this project that Mr. Bird is talking about, Mr. Bowerly, is it brings the traffic from Highway 15 across the western part of the city of Sartell out into that part of the county. which could also access the airport, which is also just off of Highway 23 and bounded by Highway 10. So it brings another major thoroughfare in the community to that airport corridor.
Very good. I do not see any member questions about your project. Any wrap-up remarks, Representative O'Driscoll?
Just once again, I think that's a great tie you've got today, sir.
Thank you.
Benton County agrees.
Representative Wills is next. Welcome to the Capital Investment Committee, Representative Wills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a testifier as well.
Very good.
Mr. Patrick Reyes from
City
of Brooklyn.
Would you care to introduce your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. House File 2801, the bill itself requests $2 million to fund much-needed repairs to Highway 52, County Road 42 in Dakota County, specifically in Rosemount in my district. And it's an area where we have been looking to get these repairs done for well over 12 years, and we're finally getting close to having the necessary funding from several different sources, including federal. We also received a MnDOT TED grant, and Dakota County is investing a portion as well. So our original ask when we introduced legislation last year was for $10 million, but thanks to these other sources, we were able to reduce the request. And also want to point out, which unfortunately I don't have a handout for you, but I don't know if you can see it from there, but one of the reasons why we want to do the repairs to this section of road is because the crash rate and severity of those crashes are all well above the statewide average. If you can see here, the light gray is the crash rate. So this is the statewide. This is the southbound ramp, and this is the northbound ramp. And then the severity rate is the darker gray, statewide, southbound, and northbound. So I'm hearing from constituents the dangers of the area, and we'd like to see this repaired and improved. You also have a map, let's make sure I have it upright, of the area. So you can see the Highway 52 here and County Road 42 going east and west. And then Mr. Patrick Reyes from Rosemount would like to add additional comments.
Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your presentation.
Thank you. My name is Patrick Rossi, and I'm the Public Works Director and City Engineer for the City of Rosemount. And I appreciate the opportunity to be here with the committee today to discuss this project. As Representative Wills mentioned, this project has a lot of history going back over a decade. The primary sponsor of the project is Dakota County, and it's a project of regional importance. Highway 52 has been designated as a high-priority interregional corridor between the Twin Cities and Rochester, and County Road 42 is the only continuous east-west roadway in central Dakota County and northern Scott County. So ultimately, there's a plan to improve this interchange to intersection to a full interchange, and this initial project will acquire the right-of-way for that full project in the future. At this time, the initial project here is really being brought forward to address the crash rates. This is a high-speed corridor, 65 miles an hour on 52 and 55 on County Road 42. Currently, County Road 42 constricts from four lanes down to two lanes immediately on the west side of the bridge. There are inadequate lane tapers on 42 approaching the bridge, and there are no left turn lanes onto either northbound or southbound 52. The bridge abutments are very narrow. It's a tight bridge, and when you're coming down the ramps, your field of view is restricted with the oncoming traffic on 42, and as a result of that, the crash rates and the severity rates are very high. The the metric, the crash rate is 4.7 times higher than the metro average on the eastern ramp and 2.9 times greater on the western ramp. So a bit of an overview on the project. The main portion of the project and the greatest expense to the project this time is to extend the bridges, and they're going to be extended both northbound and southbound to accommodate a four-lane County Road 42 and provide the appropriate site distances beneath the bridge. We'll widen 42 throughout the corridor. Overall, the length of the project on 42 is right about 3/4 of a mile. The sight lines will be improved. We're going to add tapers of appropriate length on 42 to add and drop the lanes, and we'll be adding turn lanes onto both northbound and southbound 42, as well as improving the ramps. The cost of the project, it's estimated at $19.1 million right now, and that's the all-in cost, right-of-way construction, and administrative and engineering. The breakdown of the funding at this time is $10.2 million from the federal government, $3.1 million from a MnDOT Transportation Economic Development Grant, $3.3 million from Dakota County, and Rosemount picking up $2.5 million of the project at this time. The benefit is regional. There's limited benefit to the city of Rosemount. There's only one local roadway that intersects the project area here. That's Connolly Avenue, just to the east of 52. Eventually, that roadway will be cut off from 42 to comply with the Dakota County access restrictions on the 42. In addition to that one local road, this is somewhat of a semi-rural area at this time. There are five local rural residences that access this segment of 42. So it's got limited benefit to the direct benefit to the residents of Rosemount, but it does require the $2.5 million funding from Rosemount at this time. So a bit about that. We would plan to use our municipal state aid funding for this project. Rosemount's allotted about $1.1 million annually we use to fund the improvements to our major collectors, our major city streets. So this project alone, as it currently stands, would utilize more than 2 years of our MSA allotments. We use the MSA allotments to maintain our existing collector streets and to fund new collector streets for developing areas of Rosemount. And we also use them to mitigate safety and environmental issues along these routes. So in summary, it's an important project. It's of regional significance and has limited benefit directly to the city of Rosemount, but significant financial burden. So as Representative Wills has mentioned, we are seeking $2 million to go forward with this project. Thank you.
Thank you. A follow-up comment there, Representative Wills?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to also add that it's a rather heavy industrial area, and we have a lot of trucks going through that area that are traveling regionally on the roads, and that also contributes to some of the strain and concern to the area. And on a personal note, I moved from Apple Valley to Rosemount last fall, and so now I personally take Highway 52 to get up to the Capitol, and have been able to see firsthand, as I take that several days a week, the limited sight line, as was described, and I can only imagine how scary it would be to be in a car accident in that area.
Thank you. Representative Dean has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Wills. You kind of answered my question, because when I look at these proposed traffic counts, the population of Rosemount will double, but some of these traffic counts are triple what they currently are. So my next question would follow up to that is, how far is this south of the Flint Hills Resource Plant, and do we know what the projected added truck traffic is going to become, it, should they expand their facilities, or if they expand production there?
Mr. Vasey or Ms. Wills?
I can take that, Mr. Chair and Representative. The project is south of the Flint Hills Resources Plant as far as accommodating for traffic counts from any expansion there. To my knowledge, that hasn't been done. The county has done, or their consultants have done traffic counts and expectations for the greater area, but not specific for any one project at Flint Hills Resources.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dean. Next, we have Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just quickly, what's the shovel-ready date? When do you plan to...
The project is in final design at this time, and a planned letting is to occur in February of 2017. It's planned to construct the project completely over the 2017 construction season.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Atkins.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Wills, for bringing the bill. I try to avoid the melodramatic, but we have lots of good projects that have come before this committee over the course of many months, and I appreciate that. This one, though, really is a life and death kind of project. There is no such thing. I live about 4 miles north of this intersection. No such thing as a minor accident at 52 and 42. I mean, when Representative Wills, when I think of you going through there on a daily basis, it's scary. And the sight lines are terrible. When there is a crash, it is a major crash. I don't know how many times if you hear the news and there's a crash in Rosemont, and it's a severe crash, it's at this location. And I just wanted to add that piece. I can certainly see why Dakota County made this their number one project, and Mr. Rossi, appreciate your joining us as well to attest to it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Atkins. I'm thinking maybe we should have the department down to comment on the state funding portion of this and perhaps on the accident rates. Is that feasible at this time? Maybe not. We didn't arrange this in advance, so I apologize. We will not require you to come down if you're not prepared, but if you get that information to us from the department, that would be greatly appreciated. We'll take a look at those details.
And Mr. Chair?
Representative Wills.
I would be happy to provide copies of this chart as well to the committee.
Thank you. We appreciate that. I don't see any other questions from members. Any closing remarks? Representative Wills.
I think we've very well covered the need and that we're looking at getting across the finish line very soon with only the $2.5 million cost remaining to be covered, and we're hoping we can get this done this year.
Thank you. Thank you both for being with us today.
Thank you.
Finally, today we have a project from Representative Anderson. Welcome to the testifiers table, Representative Anderson. Go ahead and introduce your project.
Thanks, Mr. Chair and members. I have a short presentation for you. As you can tell by the low number of this bill, it's not its first rodeo. It was around last year, had the hearing in the Transportation Committee with a lot of other bridge projects, and didn't make the cut because the funding amount allocated it was not sufficient to cover all the projects in the local bridge fund. In that past year, I've tried to do some learning or investigating of how the funds work, and had the MnDOT folks into my office this last week. And this project in the city of Melrose, it's over a county road over the Sauk River, and it's on the list that the MnDOT maintains for the bridge fund. I think the problem is the funding allocated doesn't cover all the bridges in the queue. I think right now there's about $40 million on that list. And if you add a couple of metro bridge projects, which tend to be more expensive, it rapidly eats up the funds available. And I think sometimes these rural bridges get overlooked because of the funding situation. This particular bridge, Mr. Chair and members, is in the city of Melrose, right off the main street. It goes over the Sauk River and heads out to the Melrose High School, so it's a heavily traveled route. And also in Melrose is a major Jennie-O turkey processing plant, so there's also a lot of truck traffic in the area. And since the original bill came out, $2.4 million, costs have increased. I talked to the city this morning, and they have purchased additional right-of-way to make the bridge one lane wider, putting in a turning lane to increase visibility and safety. They've also raised the bridge up a couple of feet in elevation to allow for pedestrian traffic to walk underneath the bridge and go underneath it. And some of the things that they've done to make the bridge a safer bridge in the city of Melrose over the County Road 13 in Stearns County. It's been the top bridge on their list for 3 years, but again, the funding has not been available, and we hope that this year is the charm to provide funding for this badly needed bridge replacement in the city of Melrose and Stearns County. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Do you have an updated cost estimate for the project with those changes?
Yeah, I do. In the updated cost, and I submitted a bill to get to the revisers again, the updated cost is about $3.4 million is what the updated costs are. In the city portion of those costs are about $635,000.
Thank you. I do not see any questions. Oh, Representative Dean has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe you can answer this, Representative Anderson. Do you know if the projects on the MnDOT master or local bridge replacement master list?
Yes, it is.
It is, okay.
Yep.
Very good. I do not see any other questions. Thank you. Any closing remarks, Representative Anderson?
No. Mentioned that bridge list, and the one I saw from MnDOT last week, it had the cost at about $500,000. So sometimes I wonder if some of these numbers need to be updated to become more current. But this bridge certainly is a higher cost than what that shows on their MnDOT list right now.
Thank you for that. You might want to stop over in the corner over there on your way out and again.
I've talked to them
and give them a little update.
They were going to have it updated. It goes to the district office in Baxter, where they approve these updated plans, then down here to St. Paul, and when they get those additional numbers, I would assume they would update their totals here.
Excellent. Thank you, Representative Anderson. Members, again, remind you that we are not having committee on Thursday. We'll see you here next week. This meeting is adjourned.